Good morning, honorable members and minister, DG, and team DST. You're most welcome to this meeting to receive the annual report and financial statement by the department, and later on we'll have Naki. We've had meetings last week, Wednesday and Thursday. We had presentations from different entities, and congratulated most of them for the, and congratulations also to the DST Minister and DG for the clean audit. Last year we were sad that we didn't get it clean, but we're happy that we've gone back to clean, but we still have to do more as a department. Let's quickly do the introduction because they are also a new member. My name is Lindwe Masego, chairperson of the committee.
Good morning, Nick Kornoff, member.
Good morning, Nokuzola Ndongeni, member of the committee.
Good morning, I am Solofelo Mutsiri, member of the committee.
Good morning, I'm Agnes Stack, member of the committee.
Good morning, I'm Tanji Mfulo, member of the committee.
Good morning, I'm Annelie Lothriet and also a member of the committee.
Good morning, Dr. Tembe Kwayo, member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You can do the other introduction, Minister.
Good morning, honorable members, colleagues. Mamoloko Kubai Ngubani, Minister of Science and Technology.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Phil Ndoha, the Director General of DST. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Tobi Makore, DDG for Institutional Planning and Support at the DST.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Priti Makukule, the Chief Financial Officer at DST.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Mbonini Mose, the Deputy Director General for Technology Innovation, or Program 2 at DST.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Committee Members. My name is Dr. Tsepo Mokoka, Advisor to the Minister.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Peggy Hadele. I'm with the Human Capital Development Division of the Department.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Kaya Sishuga. I'm the Director for International Relations at the Department of Science and Technology.
Okay. Thank you very much. We did get your apology, Minister, that you have to go to Cabinet for the meeting. So without much waste of time, we'd like to hand to you to give your introductory remarks.
Thank you very much, Chair, Honourable Members and colleagues. Just to start, firstly, perhaps maybe, Chair, so that you're not surprised why other DDGs are not here. We currently in the middle of hosting the SKA ministerial meeting. So we started yesterday. Today, the ministers in the partner countries are still in the country. They are visiting Carnarvon. So some of the DDGs had to go and be part of that. So we felt it's important so that the committee members don't get surprised, because we normally bring full complement of the DDGs into the meeting. So that's the first thing. Chairperson, thank you very much, and I do take cognizance that you've already interacted with some of our entities, and thank you for understanding that I'm going to have to leave from both yourself and members of the committee. I think we are happy as the department in terms of the process. Obviously, we're tabling our report here today, the annual performance report, and we cognizance share on the issues that have been raised by the AG, both in the department and in our entities. There were some concerns in other areas, so we started to put mechanisms in place to be able to ensure that we never regress. So both in the meeting that myself I have with the senior leadership of the department, we have what we call triple M. We have monitoring mechanisms that constantly checks around the issues of audit. I have also asked the CFO to look at the matter and constantly engage with the CFOs at the entities, and I'm comfortable, Chair, that we'll continue to produce good results in terms of our audit, and where we have some leggings will improve and tighten up. If you look even at the issues that have been raised by the AG previously, in the number of matters raised, they have been reduced and addressed by the department. So that's why I'm comfortable about the issue of what we are doing. The Director General will lead the presentation. Just to highlight from myself, Chair, that indeed we do have areas where we've not been able to achieve our targets, and we'll go into that and provide explanations in what, why we couldn't, but secondly as well, what is it that we're going to do to ensure that we don't have that. From our side, we are very clear that we must constantly make sure that where we do not meet targets, we do a proper evaluation to look at why we didn't meet the targets and what are the mechanisms. When we met together with the department and with all the entities, because we had to go through the entities' reports so that we can look at what is it. And quite of something that we have emphasized, Chair, is that when you have the reports and you do not meet targets, it's important for us to reflect why we've not met them so that we can improve going forward, so that you don't have a target that has not been met. And I think that's one of the things you'll pick up now, that you might find that one entity or in you have something that has not been met in the three consecutive years previously. But what we said is that let's take a stock and look at why we have not met it, so that it doesn't continue to be something that is a target. Then it means to us we need to review that target, we need to look at that. And we're taking cognizance that the MTEF period is coming to an end. Therefore, it gives us an opportunity to review in terms of strategy, to review in terms of goal orientation and how we position our targets. So that is very important. Chair, one of the exciting things right now, I know we're not reporting, but it's something that the committee has been aware that the work on the white paper has been going on. We did get an approval from Cabinet just to update the committee, and you'd have received your invite for the summit on the 9th that we are excited about. Our closing period for comments would have closed, but we thought, let's not just do something that is process-wise and we comply, but let's go an extra mile to ensure that what we produce as a white paper is going to be something that every South African can clearly, or the sector and the people who matters most in terms of the role players, can say that we've been consulted. We're inviting people with disabilities from Disabled South Africa, Labour, Black Business Forum, business broadly, academia. So we're trying to make sure that it's not, obviously we can't invite everyone, but we're trying to make sure that in the conversation we have as diverse views as possible, so that we can be able to say when we come here with that white paper, we bring something that is good. Chair, just from my side, I think thinking about overall issues more politically, and that maybe we are cognizant that if you look at our performance in terms of programs, we do highlight percentages of what we have not been able to achieve. And if we are to tell about the scores, we're not self-praising, Chair, but we've done fairly well, above 80% in terms of all the programs for performance indicators. Obviously, there are areas that we would want to continue to emphasize, do well, where they are critical for us, but more move into even monitoring and evaluation. One of the things that we are going to improve, and we are improving currently, is around how we manage our projects, how we manage our oversight in terms of the entities, so that we do not lose sight in key areas that we are that are important. Chair, we still have issues around our vacancies. Vacancy rate, you see, that is not within what we wanted, and I think the DG will come to that. Precisely, it's because of budget issues. And perhaps this is something that we'd have picked up even with our entities. The constraint in fiscal, we're not naive not to understand that there is financial difficulties, and therefore the revenue that it generates and what Treasury has to allocate, their difficulties and priorities. But we do need to flag it that it does impact on our work, and therefore the level of what you would have wanted to do with more resources reduces and you end up with less. And that's why most of the posts have not been filled. And in areas where we thought are critical, you find staff constrained because they have to do more. And because it's a environment where you need special skills as well, you need people with competent skills. Now, if you have one person focusing on a number of areas, it constrains the department, but also in terms of research and capacity, we have seen with our entities that constrains the work that and the output that we have to do. So constantly we'll continue to engage with Treasury to request more resources to be able to meet our targets, to meet our responsibilities. So I thought at high level, Chair, I would not go into the details in terms of the work that we needed to do, where there's been delays. DG will go into the details in terms of what needs to be done, but I think I can sit here comfortably, Chair, unless if colleagues have more questions for us. We're comfortable with the report. We've gone through, we are improving where we need to improve and make sure that the department continues to deliver on its mandate as requested. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. I think we also highlighted to other entities that what brings a bit of solace is the fact that the presidency has been bit by the bug of science and technology, research and development. And so it's exciting because in our trip, if you look at our report, in South Korea and Japan, that's where it's located, and that's why they are successful. So we believe that at least with the minister that is pushy as you, and ensured that even in a meeting that was on telecommunication, President finds himself talking about science and technology and you know the BRICS summit and the centrality thereof was science and technology, research and development. So we believe that we are indeed on a road of attaining that 1.5% by 2030, maybe even before that. So that's what brings some, that there's some light at the end of the tunnel. And we wish that you continue pushing. We'll push you from behind so that you go forward and I raise these issues. So, as we've always said, that if the NDP has recognized research and development, and also to have a vote of research and development so that people don't just move funds, but when also call on other departments to utilize some of the expertise that we have in science and technology. HSRC can be their consultants. They hire consultants and they bring back a Shogin report, and they'll still go back and then ask when the going gets tough, they remember that there's a competent department, there's HSRC, there's CSIR and stuff like that. So as our motto being, we need to work within this unitary state that we are in, and departments to work with each other, not compete with each other. That way we'll be able to achieve more with less, and also to help each other to grow and improve the economy of the country. Thank you very much, Minister. Not sure if there's anything that you'd want to ask the Minister, but the accounting officer is here, will account for everything. So, Minister.
Before I leave, members, you'd note you'd be meeting, we did write to the Speaker, I hope they have forwarded our report in terms of appointments of boards. I'm not so sure if that report has arrived, Chairperson, so that I'm not leaving here without even indicating that we've got board members that are new. We've appointed board members in SANSA, we've appointed board members in NRAF, and then we've appointed in Naki councillors, because you're going to see new councillors as well today. And we in the process of finalizing the CSIR to go to cabinet so that we do so. That we've done, Chair. So I thought, let me just, before I leave, indicate that we've done that process and we have complied in submitting the report through to, we wrote to the speaker and the NCOP chairperson to notify them of the appointment as required by the law. Yeah, we just need to get a push. If we can get the Minister of Finance speaking like President on science and technology.
Yes, definitely, but at least you were able also to get the Minister of Mineral Resources to sing your tune. So, you know, Biki McNair will get them one by one until all of them sing the science and technology tune. Thank you very much, Minister, and we did welcome the new board members last week on those NRF and so forth. So, yeah, but we are positive, and it is indeed competent people that have been appointed, and we just look forward to grow from in leaps and bounds with the new board, probably new ideas that they're bringing to the board. And good luck, Minister, and thank you very much. You may be excused for that. And with that, we'll then give over to the DG.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. The first part of the presentation will go through it with breakneck speed, with your permission, because of the vision and mission that the committee has seen and the alignment to the national priorities, so we can quickly share what came out of the audit and the analysis over a period of time, as the Chair and the Minister indicated, and give some highlights and then the financial performance, which I will do, but the CFO is here if there are further detailed questions, Honourable Chairperson. So we're here to present the annual report for the 17-18 year. As I've said, this is the vision that the Honourable Members on slide number 4 have seen, and the slide 5 is the alignment to national priorities on health, on decent employment, skilled and capable workforce, efficient, competent and responsive economic infrastructure network, vibrant, equitable and sustainable rural communities, good security for all and environmental assets. So we contribute, we have targets that we track and reported on these outcomes. So maybe the first slide that perhaps we want to indicate is this figure 1 that shows that the department has been working on the number of findings that have been raised by the Auditor General. On the extreme left, Honorable Chair, slide number 7, we show you how from 15 in blue, 16 in red peach, and then light green, the total findings from the Auditor General shows that they've been coming down. And then we've split them into finance, and again you can see in finance, 26 findings in 15-16, and this year we only had 6, and we are grateful to the CFO and the team. And the performance information, we seem to be going up and down, 7, 6, 15 and 16 to 14 in 16 and 17 and 10 this year. And some of the problems are becoming generic here, and we'll share those with the Honourable Chair and Members. And then on information technology, we've had this year an increase in the number of findings, but it's just because the Auditor General paid attention on this and we're working on this. And then again, you can see on human resource management, they've been coming down from 2 to 1 to 0. And as we have said, we are grateful that we have an unqualified audit opinion, which is called Clean Audit. But we are worried about this, Honourable Chair. As you said, sometimes when you get a clean audit, then you rest on your laurels, and then the following year you regress. So we'll be working hard in making sure that we maintain this in the years to come. So this is the financial performance progress. Again, as I've said before, shows that we've been coming down. and decreased substantially by 76% from 1516 to now. And then these are the following interventions that contributed to the performance in finance. As executive, we have been looking at improving the quality of financial information. We have been tightening on the strict internal controls and compliance with rules and regulations. These measures we hope will continue to have a positive impact on the overall reporting and compliance with the applicable legislations and regulations. We've also effectively implemented an approved supply chain management guidelines for the prevention and detection of unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and everybody knows what their roles are in these guidelines and what they ought to do, because sometimes the assumption is that it's only the accounting officer who must worry about this or the CFO, so everybody along the chain has a responsibility, and this has been clearly articulated in this document. So the next thing is just to make sure we implement this and that these controls continue to improve processes and procurement of goods and services by the department. This is the performance information. As we indicated, sometimes we've been up and down on this one. And then for 17-18, programs 2, 4, and 5 were sampled with these following audit issues: differences between the annual performance report and the list or registered databases submitted by programs. So we are working on ensuring that the information that is on the registers, databases, and what's on the annual performance report is consistent, so we don't have material adjustments when the auditors find this. And then also we found that there's sometimes misalignment between the technical indicator descriptors and the reported performance information from the implementing agencies. This is a matter that we're still working hard on with our entities, but we think we are almost close to alignment. And then it can be noted that the department has decreased its findings from 14 to 10. And as I say, this is attributed to us working hard to improve the quality of the reported information, strict internal controls of our data management, and compliance with the rules and regulations. So on the overall performance of the DST, the Minister highlighted that we achieved 84% of what we had set out at the beginning of the year, with 16% not achieved, and that towards the end of the presentation we will highlight those areas where we have not achieved and or perhaps the challenges why some of them have not been considered as achieved. We would like maybe next time to get closer to 90% of things that we have achieved. That would be our target. So just to remind ourselves, we have strategic outcome-oriented goals that are on our strategic plan, and then we report every year on the APP on how we're doing on this. As the Minister has indicated, we are on the final stages of the draft white paper, and we hope that after the summit we will take the last set of comments that we'll have and then try and finalize this document. We hope that if it all goes well, perhaps early next year, it will go through the government processes to be adopted. I will be with some team members, be here, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, to share what I think is in the white paper next week. Yes. But just some highlights that this white paper recognizes that inclusivity is central to the national system of innovation, both in terms of promoting social justice and fostering a system in which creativity and learning can flourish. NACI, the National Advisory Council on Innovation that will present after us, has been commissioned to produce a framework for a decadal plan. So the thinking is that once the white paper has been adopted, then we have to develop a 10-year plan on science, technology, and innovation, and they have started on this framework, and we hope that it will be available early next year, and once the white paper is adopted, then we'll go through a consultation process to actually draft a decadal plan. We also are in the process of reviewing the intellectual property rights from publicly financed research and development Act of 2008 and the National Intellectual Property Management Office. And these reviews are going to happen this year, so we'll again bring the outcome of these processes to the committee as part of looking at how we can have a national system of innovation that is responsive to the challenges of the country. We also completed, a report was submitted to the Minister on the review of the Science and Technology Innovation Institutional Landscape. So the view is that unless we are careful about the fact that whilst we are seeing an increase in the number of PhDs that we are training and master's students, unless we also think about how we expand the institutions in the system, we could find ourselves in a situation where these PhDs are taxi drivers or are not doing the work. So this still work is trying to say, what is the lay of the land in terms of the institutions? Do we have the institutions that are adequate for us to meet the ambition that we have? And we are now, of course, taking the next step of this report, and hopefully again, our anticipation is that maybe June, July next year, we should have a report that talks about either consolidating institutions, shutting down some of them, or set up new ones. So we will come to the committee. And then, of course, the other matter that Honorable Chair, you mentioned is that the budget coordination instrument was approved by Cabinet, and we're working hard with our colleagues at Treasury on how this can be done, especially towards the science councils that do not report to science and technology, to ensure that they've got adequate budgets and that their budgets are used for research and development to support this sector. So this is work in progress. So on the second strategic outcome-oriented goal, which is about increasing knowledge generation, that without research grants support, knowledge generation is not possible. So in the 17-18 financial year, we awarded just over 4,000 research grants. 36 went to black researchers and 38 went to women. We are not happy with these numbers. We are working with the National Research Foundation, and I suspect, Chair, if they've been here, they've already talked about the ministerial guidelines on the transformation issues, and at the moment we are discussing how we can resource this new framework of making sure that we move higher up on these numbers for black and women researchers. We also hold every year the Center of Excellent Directors Forum to just make sure that not only do these centers of excellence, if they can assist us with the challenges we have, do research, but they also respond to issues of science engagement and making sure that knowledge helps us to transform society where it can. And then we are grateful for the new program that has been launched on the National eScience Postgraduate Teaching and Training. This is a very important area of training people for data science and data analytics, which is the skills that we all going to need in the modern economy and in this new world order. 30 students have been registered in January for this master's degree on e-science, and over 8,000 research articles have been published by the entities and ourselves that are cited in this Thomson Reuters Web of Science citation database. This was launched by the Deputy President at the Meerkat 64 Disharay. At the moment, the team is just trying to make sure that it's commissioning the telescope, and it's beginning to make sure that science is being done on this telescope, and we are all looking forward to that. And maybe for the info for the committee through you, Honorable Chair, is that we are now spending a lot more time overseas trying to make sure that the 133 dishes that will be integrated into this come to South Africa. And the indications is that if it all goes well by 2021, we should still start to see the construction of the additional 133 dishes for the phase one of the SKA. So sometimes if you don't see me in some of these meetings, it's because we are trying to convince others to make sure we have money for these 133 dishes, Honorable Chair. We also are grateful for the upgrade that is happening in the Center for High Performance Computing. They have really continued to upgrade this machine, and as you know, it's in the top 500 list of supercomputers that people have seen. And also, last year, South Africa, a team of young people who are developing expertise in the construction and the development of these supercomputers took the second prize in this prestigious international student cluster competition. So we do have youngsters in this area who will continue to be the ones supporting the work. And then the development of the big data strategy is progressing very, very well. As we all know that almost everything in the economy these days depends on big data, so we have to have a strategy on how we're going to move in this area. We also have completed the implementation of the first 10 gigabits per second Pathfinder connection to the Global Research and Education Network on the West Coast Africa cable, undersea cable from South Africa to London. This will be transmitting large amounts of data, both for researchers, but in particular for the SKA to the rest of the researchers. The headquarters is in Manchester at the moment, so they will have all the data, and then they will decide how it's distributed to the scientists. On human capital development, we have a number of highlights that we'd like to share with the committee. We're committed to addressing transformation issues, as I've indicated, in the country, and we have commissioned and completed several high-level investigations of issues related to transformation of the postgraduate and researcher cohorts. I may ask Peggy to talk about this if the Honorable Chair agrees. We conducted a study which was done by Crest from Stellenbosch to say, why are we having a smaller number of South Africans in particular that follow honors and masters and PhD studies? So that study, I can't remember, Peggy, where it is now. I think we are towards the end of completing that study. The other study that we have completed is what happens to these PhDs or master's students when they graduate. What proportion of them stay within the academia? What proportion of them go to industry? When they go to industry, what exactly do they do? So these are some of the studies that I think we have conducted in order to make sure that we don't just get excited about funding students, but try and get to know what they do. And as I've said, these are some of the insights that we'll be getting out of this. And then on the bursaries that we are awarding 3,621 students were supported, and 10,000 at honors and masters students that we supported, and 823 graduates and students were placed in DST-funded work in preparation, which are just the internship program, which we are always grateful about. We always hope and wish that we can have more of these young people being taken into these work preparation programs. And then, of course, we've reached over 2.5 million people on the science awareness and engagement programs run, of course, by the NRF. So using knowledge for economic development, we are grateful that we, together with the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, are trying to look at how we can really make sure that knowledge assists industries. Small, medium enterprises, and of course some sectors of the economy that are either losing the market share or competitiveness. So we set up this Biomanufacturing Industry Development Center at the CSIR, and I suspect, Chair, you've had the opportunity to visit and see it. If not, I would again recommend, because the work that they are doing to support small medium enterprises on the areas of biotech related industries is commendable. We also launched in the year we're reporting the Biorefinery Industrial Development Facility at the CSIR campus in Durban, which is aimed at innovation-led industry development and competitiveness, encouraging increased private sector investment in research development activities and job promoting job creation. So one of the challenges, as you know, in this sector is that very few companies that have been making paper from wood are generating revenue because people are now reading online. So what happens to the industries like Mondi and Sappi that are and they're looking for diversification of their use of wood, pulp for other, and this center is working fairly closely with those industries to look at how this can be done. We also are grateful about the approval by Cabinet for the Sovereign Innovation Fund, and we're working with our colleagues at Treasury on how this fund can assist in the commercialization of ideas from research. What is even more interesting is that the Treasury has already agreed, in response to the State of the Nation address by the President, that approximately 2.1 billion rands would be made available over the MTF to support innovative small medium companies that want to innovate, and then we are working with the Department of Small Business on how we can implement and execute this fund to support small medium enterprises. We're also grateful about the support that General Electric is providing to our program that is run at the CSIR, the Tech Localization Implementation Unit, that is trying to provide expertise to small medium enterprises on how they can have knowledge to improve the products that they can give to big companies like General Electric. So we are grateful on this contract of 3.8 million for 1 year with the possibility of renewal and the investment of 5 million that General Electric has committed on the 9 identified suppliers to improve their products to supply to GE. And then we have programs which we have, I suspect, reported on, but Mr. Morphe is here to highlight some of them, where we have a number of initiatives that were undertaken to promote cooperatives and agro-processing initiatives. 5 honeybush cooperatives and agro-processing facilities are assisted, including branding by the DST, and these cooperatives have 42 beneficiaries, and 50% of them are women. And then these are some of the activities that we are supporting: the wheat breeding platform, maize breeding, soybean and soybean food and nutrition project. These projects are focusing on developing drought-tolerant, heat-tolerant and pest-resistant varieties for smallholders. In this day of change in the climate, it is important that smallholders are supported in these initiatives. And then we are also grateful about this program of the solar turtle, the spin-out company from Stellenbosch University, on one of the renewable energy hubs and spokes program that we've been supporting that has built on the success of the Technology for Rural Education and Development program in the Eastern Cape village of Kofimvaba. In partnership with Nedbank, this solar turtle team has provided a 100% renewable energy powered mobile bank in a shipping container which has been launched at the village 60 kilometers from Umtata. So again, just demonstrating how you can use new forms of energy to address challenges in South Africa. We are also grateful about the progress we're making on this 3D printing program at the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, which is a joint public-private engagement started, of course, at the CSIR for making sure that you print the parts or manufacture the parts through using laser and powder and get the completed parts. So this is making progress. NSC or CSIR with Aerosud are already having parts that are being tested, I think, at Airbus in Europe, and some that are being tested in another company in the US. Utilizing knowledge for inclusive development, we are grateful on the program with Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that is looking at how we can develop innovative sanitation technologies. As you know, this has enabled access to decent and appropriate sanitation services to previously underserved rural communities, and there was a launch that was done last year at Starterheim. And then an innovative water efficient sanitation technology solution from the University of Loughborough in the UK is also being localized in South Africa, and we are looking at local prototype and beginning to test some of these programs. We're also grateful that with the Department of Health we are piloting this portable umbilical artery Doppler device. What the device does is it measures the growth of a child in a pregnant woman, so that if the growth is not expected or is not as expected, you can have early intervention to avoid the risk of stillbirth. And this is being expanded across some South Africa, some clinics in South Africa. And also, project has secured funding from World Health Organization for an expanded study in the countries that are shown in this slide: Ghana, India, Kenya, and Rwanda. We also have, as members know, targeted decision support initiatives where we support using science and technology, innovation in local economic development. And we are grateful with the partnership that is beginning to merge with other departments that are interested in taking up this initiative. There was a policy dialogue, there was a conference led by the Ministers of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, and we were invited to share some of these initiatives. Of course, we are contributing to empowering small-scale producers in agriculture, forestry, and fisheries with a review of existing information and communication technology platforms in support of agriculture. On the international bilateral work, we continue to have headways with some countries: New Zealand on big data, SKA, Norway, Oceans Research, United Kingdom with the Newton Fund. In the meeting that the minister talked about on the partner countries in the SKA, this program featured very, very strongly on the development in Africa through radio astronomy, the DARA program. And then we also continue to look at how we can support and work with the BRICS countries, focusing on a number of initiatives, big data with other big countries in the fourth industrial revolution, as was the theme this year. The minister also formalized engagement on US aid, as well as with France, on the program to support technical training and capacity building in agriculture. And then with Brazil, the South-South framework for scientific and technical cooperation in the South and tropical Atlantic and Southern Oceans has been signed. And then the minister also signed the Belém Statement on Atlantic Research and Innovation Cooperation with the EU and Brazil. So this is a big consortium of countries in the north and the south working together on the Atlantic Ocean because of the fish stock and how, as a result of climate change, we need to have a full understanding of what's happening in this area. The minister has also approved the implementation of the Continental Flagship Program, namely the Oliver Regional Tambo Research Chairs Program, which was established with South Africa support at leading African universities under the oversight of the NRF and the Open Science Platform. And then in partnership with the NEPAD Business Foundation, we hosted 9th AU Private Sector Forum to look at a number of issues around the impact of the fourth industrial revolution in Africa. And then, of course, we are in the successful conclusion adoption of the African Space Agency statutes, which contributed to the final decision for South Africa to host the Pan-African University Institute for Space Sciences. And then there are a number of initiatives in the SADC framework that we support. The implementation of the SADC Foresight Energy Study is underway, SADC Cyber Infrastructure Framework, and a number of initiatives such as the NutriDrink in partnership with Botswana. So this is Chairperson going through the program's overview very, very quickly. Again, the committee is familiar with the programs of the department. I'll rather jump to slide number 44 just to give you a quick snapshot of how the targets were achieved. And as the minister has indicated, almost all the programs achieved more than 80%, which are the blue bars, and then the reds are, of course, the areas where we did not perform. So on the public entities annual performance plan and shareholders compact, this was achieved. The issue of ensuring that for audit purposes you have the internal audit together with the audit committee and the risk committee working together, that's what is meant by the combined assurance report. This was done this year, so we are very grateful. Probably contributed to us getting clean audit, and then on the media articles we had a target of 24 and we got 77. And the public participation program, where the minister identifies activities to share with the public on the work that we do or what support we need to do, 10 was the target, we reached 11, and we had an extensive discussion on the audit opinion earlier on. Program 2, some of the highlights: 19 instruments funded in support of the knowledge utilization, we achieved that. Knowledge outputs, which are either patents, publications, or technology demonstrators, exceeded. And on the strategy policy directives in designated areas in support of economic sectors, this was also achieved. On the regulatory recommendations for decision support that I have highlighted earlier on, again achieved. Decision support interventions, 2 was the target, 3 were achieved. On the trainees attending training initiatives, 240 was the target. On the international cooperation and resources, we were hoping to get 420 million in international funds. We got 448, and we are grateful for this from our partners. 250 invested by international partners in their own organizations and initiatives, but targeted at supporting human capital development by South Africa, again exceeded that amount. But the international partner organization collaborating with South African partners, again that exceeded. International technical exchanges, instead of 20, we had 67. In fact, the worry in this portfolio is that we need to manage it very, very well, because of course you only have such a big NSI, National System of Innovation, and you must be careful that you don't put a strain with all of these collaborations, but it's a portfolio that has done very, very, very well. On the research innovation and science, technology and innovation, human capital development cooperation projects, again, target of 50-76 was achieved. On international funds directly invested in African regional and continental research, this is monies that are put to build capacity between ourselves and the regional partners, so again we were able to get a substantial amount above the 80 million target. On program 4, as we've indicated, 3,621 PhD students awarded bursaries, graduates placed 823, as I indicated in the strategic outcome-oriented goals, that's achieved. We've talked about the gigabits per second available broadband capacity provided by Sunland to our institutions, including connecting sites in rural institutions, that's been achieved. Research articles published, over 8,000. And then we did provide the Climate Change Research Network that was formalized in South Africa through Memorandum of Understanding. We would like to change this target, and we are working on changing it so that we can begin to share with the with the Portfolio Committee and other colleagues in other departments what this research that is done in climate change is doing to inform what we have to do as a country. So we'll be changing this, I think it's, if I'm not mistaken, for this coming financial year, I don't remember, but I think we're working on this. So on the last program, 6 knowledge products were completed and published, 8 decision support was the target, we had 10, and learning intervention seminars generated the 9 that team achieved, especially the work in social science and how you can use it to inform policy. Number of students supported in this program, instead of 90, we had 105. And then in terms of knowledge and innovation products, the target was 4, we achieved 5. master's students, 291 master's and doctoral in this program, and the interns that were supported is 195 instead of 100 in the area related to design, manufacturing, and product development. Unfortunately, the world is not always kind to us, so let's say that some of the targets were not achieved, and as we have shared with the committee before, it's either process delays, and this refers to under or non-achievement due to factors which are not within the control of the DST, and such targets require the department to better manage the interdependent nature of the deliverables. So we are not disowning the fact that we need to manage these processes, so we are trying to tighten them up. Sometimes we expect from our implementers to give us progress, or sometimes to give us the information when we're working with the targets with our entities that we are co-owning to make sure that they support us in making sure we report on this. In certain instances, is the formulation of targets, which is on an ongoing basis, needs to be modified and be addressed. So this is when you set up a target and there are some unforeseen areas or issues during the formulation of the target. So just to highlight then, Honorable Chair, the Minister has already talked about the vacancy rate, that this is really mainly as a result of the cap that the National Treasury has given us for the resources to manage staff, and then we've not been able to fill the position because we had to come back to that ceiling. So we are 1% higher. And then in terms of disclosures, we got 239 instead of 280. And Mr. Moofe can perhaps talk about this in much more detail. This is a target that, as I say, is both process and sometimes you can never set it up with accuracy because researchers tell you will disclose, but it's only when they actually have done the research that they will know whether they are able to meet those disclosures. And then a slight problem in our partnership with the National Research Foundation in terms of master's students that are funded. We didn't meet this target. These are students in the energy area, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Moofe, and the contract we had to terminate with the NRF because of poor quality of data. So they will report directly from their perspective. So the students continue to be funded, but we've transferred all the funding so that they can manage this issue of data outside the department. And then this is the relationship we have with our overseas partners. As we have indicated, sometimes confidentiality policies prevented international partners from providing evidence required for performance reporting. And the establishment of the proposed program to widen access to global knowledge partnership and research innovation exchange platform will assist in this regard. So we hope that this matter would be resolved next year because we'll have a full suite of knowledge exchange targets. So if maybe one implementer is not ready to give us the data, we should be able to report effectively on the number and provide the evidence. But again, Mr. Kaya Sishuga could expand on this if the chair requires. And then this is an area of working fairly closely with the institutions. This was the number of students in the honors BTEC and master's pipeline that we are supporting with the NRF, and then we are trying to work fairly closely with the NRF to ensure that these underachieved targets are managed very well, and that if there is a problem during the year, we are alerted early. So again, this is just managing the oversight between us and the NRF, which I think in this case we took our eyes off the ball. And then the infrastructure grants and the contracts were issued for 30 grants, but award letters were only issued for 28. Again, this is something that with the NRF we would have liked to manage a bit more tight. On the statistical reports, there are some technical problems here in the sense that we delayed in the rollout of the business innovation survey. because the institute that is helping us to do this, the HSRC, has decided to delay, I think, collecting data from the private sector because they were requesting the minister to write a letter of support because we find that the private sector in the business survey doesn't respond and we end up with low response rate and the statistical general then doesn't want to consider this report as a reliable report. So we are working on these. And then the other two reports were delayed because when we were taking them to cabinet, the cluster of DGs requested a workshop to have detailed discussion on these reports. I think it was the R&D survey and the other one for R&D survey in state-owned companies. And therefore, we honored that report, but it meant finalizing the report was delayed. And then the committee has been, I think, briefed on the pre-approval decisions that are provided for the R&D tax incentive. So at the time of reporting, we still have not been able to get to the 90 days of the date of receipt, so we're at 100 days. But we think that we have dealt with all of the backlogs. We are now at the stage of just addressing, I think, the ones that were received this year. And we've also implemented all of the recommendations of the task team that the minister had appointed. So we hope this will not be here next year. So lastly, Honorable Chair, on the performance, as you would know, this is how the budget is split between the programs of the DST, with a sizable chunk going to Program 4 that transfers to the NRF, followed by Program 5, followed by Program 2, and then 1, and lastly Program 3. So the split is 93% of transfers and subsidies, 7 billion in total, and then the department merely consumes 7% of that budget. And this again is a summary of the budget, the planned expenditure and the actual expenditure, and we had a surplus of 0.9%. We know that half of that amount of money was supposed to have been transferred and then we had some contractual delays with the NRF, and if that had been done, that number would have been even less. And this is the financial performance per program. Again, this is just to present the same information in granular detail and per classification. And again, the largest largest budget goes to transfers. So in conclusion, we recognize that if South Africa is to advance along the trajectory set out in the NDP, it will require a strong, coherent and effective national system of innovation, which is working in a coordinated manner to achieve the national policies. But we think the white paper, the decade plan and the steel report are helping us to get closer to this effective NSR. DST continue to encourage and strengthen industry innovation partnership. We think this is extremely important to support decent work, and we continue to make sure we have adequate skills for South Africans. And then we also recognize that transformation is extremely important in the human capital development, and we continue to strive hard to make sure that we keep the highest standards of corporate governance, which are crucial for the management of public finances and resources. So, Chair, I think that's the end of the presentation, and my team this year have agreed that they will respond to all the questions from the Honourable Member, because I've done all the work. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG, for this report, and much welcome. Let me give an opportunity to members, Honorable Dr. Lotrit, Honorable Mfulo, Honorable Goronoff, Honorable Dr. Tembekwa, in that order. Dr. Lotrit.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much, DG, for the presentation. As always, it's a very good presentation. I think one of the concerns, again, is what the Minister has also referred to is the vacancy issue, and I think the committee is quite aware of the fact that because these are specialized skills, it is real problem that has to be addressed. But then I just have two things. You referred to looking at the landscape, the still landscape, and the situation that we are actually now producing PhDs, but can they find jobs? And I just want to say that what we should also look at here is that maybe the focus is on very technical skills and PhDs, but we have a research chair in science communication, and I've had an experience now with someone who just did her PhD, but she cannot find a job anywhere. So there she sits with this wonderful qualification, and we know how important the communication of science is, especially if we look at the focus that's now being placed on S&T. So if you could perhaps also look at that particular field. And then on slide 39, you refer to the cyber structure framework that the department is now looking at for our role in SADC. Could you perhaps, or one of the members, or someone who is here, perhaps just give a bit more information, because as we move or are in this world of the fourth industrial revolution, cyber security is critical to everything we do and what we're going to do. So if someone could just perhaps elaborate on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Fuller.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the good presentation. My question is just around when you talk about the challenges that you have in terms of vacancies, what is the plan? Because I don't see the plan to say these are the challenges and our plan is to do 1, 2, 3, 4. And then also in terms of PhDs, are we training for the sake of training? Or are we training because there's a need somewhere? Have we ever looked at to say, where can we utilize these PhDs and then the people, because it, nowadays it's a buzz. You must have a degree, you must have that. But at the end of the day, most of the time it does not talk to ordinary people there, or it does not talk to businesses if they have to employ these people. So maybe we need to relook on what are we really training for, or what are we subsidizing for, so that at the end of the day we should not have a lot of people qualified, but at the end of the day there's nothing that we can do around it. So it means our planning should talk also to the society at large. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Koronov.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. It appears that the PhDs are the flavor of the day. But, you know, can I don't want to ask a question about that. You know, what I want to suggest, is it not possible to have a program to make sure that PhDs goes to the educational system, schooling. Let them go to primary schools and secondary schools as PhDs and let them teach. Is there a program there like that? Because there is definitely a need at that level. Then on the meerkat, you know, phase one was 64 dishes. Is phase two another 64 that will bring it to 132, and then finally, do you envisage a phase three for meerkat eventually? And what will be the difference between the phase one and phase two? Will they do the same sort of in terms of gathering of information? Will it be the same? It will just be bigger. I just would like to know what is the difference between the new 64 dishes that will come. And then last year, you know, I just look at our report last year. ASAF came up, you know, the amendments to the Act so that the Auditor General can do the necessary audits. But, you know, that has not been done. I know we're not in a season. This Parliament has come to its end. It's not in a season to entertain, you know, unnecessary amendments. But if you could just put that in the back of your mind that we deal with it in the next year.
Thank you, Dr. Tembeway.
Thank you for the presentation. My question was repeated by the three previous speakers, but I would like to put it differently.
is about the problem of jobs vis-a-vis the graduates in general. But my question would be, since you are in collaboration with a vast number of national and international, small and big companies, is there no possibility of entering into a possible agreement of placement of the graduates, number one? Number two, do you perhaps at the end of, say for an example, they have graduated, do you check on whether they are hired or not? Because it's very much disturbing to produce a number of PhDs and masters that are not in actual fact benefiting the poor students. Number two, it's based on slide 18. Slide 18 here, with the introduction of the e-science, right? And what I would like to know is, here mention is made of the degree in e-science will be led by University of Witwatersrand. My question is, why Witwatersrand amongst all the institutions that are available in South Africa? And when do you intend to spread it to other institutions? It is a very important innovation, and I think it can be used throughout the institutions in South Africa. That's my question there. And then there are 30 students being registered. Are they funded by you? And if not, why? Slide 35 informs us about a project called Tswane Khulelwe Project, a very, very important one, because it concentrates on detecting fetuses at the risk of, you can conclude it there. I think it's very much important within the health sector, as it has been mentioned. But my question is, has this project been presented in the Committee of Health? I think they would be interested in actual fact in sharing or knowing this important information. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you, DG. You know, initially I wanted to say that Mr. Hadebe and Mr. Mofe to present, as you said, to elaborate on some of the slides that you had indicated on. But mine mostly are comments that firstly, we have also highlighted to the AG that they must not township lingo, you say, make it trap, yabo. So they mustn't put a trap for us. But when they see something, you know, bells ringing, they must highlight that and bring it to your attention. But also it's also linked to the role of the internal auditors, because they are there precisely to look at all those things. And then also that the importance of the department itself exercising oversight over the entities is important. So that we just not tick the box, and at the end of the day we find that we didn't exercise much oversight on that. If you could also bring to our attention or share with us the process in relation to ASAF and the compliance with the PFMA, whether it is will it be included in the white paper, or what is it? Because you can't have part of what dents your performance is just that small compliance with PFMA by ASAF. I think we also asked them about them, where they are housed, and the possibility, probably because they are a small entity, to be housed in the main building of the department, instead of being standalone, and the little resource they have, and the budget spent on rent and stuff like that. On part of the oversight, DG, is to ensure that when departments or entities of the department also organize functions, that part of the oversight that you exercise is to ensure that those don't clash. You run, there's the IKS conference in Tshwane, and clashing with the NRF awards. So, you know, you want to attend all those, or you want also to ask members to attend, and there's that clash. One of the questions that was raised on the other entities, which was the issue of funding, and the caution of getting more funding from private partners who will then call the tune. But we also understand your constraints in the budget, and I'm not sure how to mitigate that. And just to find out, how far are your engagement with the small business entity in relation to absorbing those that you have incubated, and you've done your bit, and you can't go much further, because as we spoke of one unitary state and department, interdepartment relationship, that we should work as that intentional, and instead of competing with each other. Honorable Tuck, you look like you want to. We have a question. No, put it now.
Chairperson, I want to say thank you for the presentation, but the other thing that came up by me, is, which I don't see anywhere, is there is people with PhDs outside the system. I don't know what to call it, but I'm wondering, and I'm reading sometimes about people with PhDs who's not working with it. And I would like to know, what is the department doing about that? Do they know how many PhDs we have? And how can they be absorbed in the system? Something like that. So, according to me, they are lying out there and are not being used. And people are complaining. You can hear people talk about it in the paper sometimes, that I have got this and I can't make use of it. And I think South Africa needs that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Dichi, one of the things that we noted when we went to Japan was that there's a, is it Japan or South Korea, where the ESCOM takes some of their staff for skills training. Yeah. And our concern was that, you know, you're taking people who are already in the mainstream, who are employed, you know, who do have an opportunity of getting skills. Although probably you need more, but why not target those graduates and postgraduate students to be the ones that, you know, benefit from this program and are able then to acquire those skills and be employable and marketable when they come back, you know. So it's like you know, already in the system, people who are already in, who are employed, who get a salary, but take them, and in the meantime, we do have a problem. Yeah, that is all, DJ. It's over to you.
Thanks very much, honorable members, for these sharp questions. May I then perhaps start to feel them as I and then I will come back. So the first one from Honorable Lutrich, about the steel landscape and the technical skills and the ones that are not able to find the jobs. I'm not so sure if Peggy wants to have a first bite on that one, Peggy Khadebe. I will come back, Honorable Lutrit, on the cyber framework because it's fresh in our heads because it was presented at the two-day meeting that we had with the ministers from the partner countries and the Rora, so I'll come back to that. And then, not sure, CFO, if you are able to respond to the issues of the vacancy rate from the planning in terms of how we wanting to address that going forward. And then Peggy could also respond to the PhD training for training or training for applications. Maybe highlight some of the programs that we used to have in the system, not necessarily by ourselves. The TRIP program, the technology, the human resources for industry partnership. So maybe you could talk about that, but also the study, Peggy, that I mentioned earlier on that is being done to try track where they are first. And then Honorable Koronov on the PhD, again, Peggy could talk about the need for them to be deployed in the schooling environment, but also I think the capacity of these PhDs into the academia, the next generation, the NCAP program, so you could also talk about that. And then I will come back with the unpacking of the Meerkat 133 and phase 2 of the SKA later on. On the ASAF issue, Honorable Goranov, I think it was also raised by the Honorable Chair. I'll ask the CFO to talk about the status of where the process of, I think, asking concurrence with the Minister of Finance to have them as a listed entity, one, and probably secondly, where is the process of the S&T Laws Amendment Bill, because I think that was another mechanism. So those would be the two interventions around that. And then the question from Honorable Member Tembeguayo on the graduates and the agreement of placement of graduates. Peggy can talk about that in the small companies and training them for, and then Peggy could also talk about the e-science, why VITS and not the others, and the funding of the 30 students, whether that is they are funded. And then I'll ask Mr. Mwofe to talk about Tswane Kulelwe with the engagement with the health committee to respond to that. And then we'll also ask Peggy to comment on the PhDs outside the system as part of Peggy's response, Honorable Tuck's question. Kaya, Mr. Shushuba, is willing to talk about the possibility of amending or refining the Hitachi program, maybe he can have the first bite and then I could respond. And then I will try, Honorable Chair, to respond to some of the ones that you've commented on. But we appreciate all of them and all of the comments. So, Mr. Khadebe, start with you, then maybe Mr. Sishuba, Mr. Mwofe, CFO, and then we'll try and wrap up if there are others that are probably not addressed in detail.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. I'm going to try and respond to all the questions, but not in a manner in which they were directed to me by the DG, because I've been taking notes all along the way. Maybe just to begin with, as a department that prides itself on you know, on evidence-based decision-making in terms of our policy interventions. We have, in the last MTF, completed a number of studies. One, as mentioned by the DG, is the retention and conversion study for postgraduate students. What it is, actually, is looking at students who registered for an honors degree in a particular base reference year and looking at them 2 years down the line, tracking the individual student 3 years down the line and even 5 years down the line. So just to assess how leaky our postgraduate pipeline is leading to a PhD. That study was completed and we were distilling, you know, policy interventions from it, and we're integrating that into a framework that we're working together with the NRF on the transformation of the postgraduate student student cohort. The other study as well that was undertaken in the same MTF is the silent majority study. What it is, we looked at, you know, within your what we call the emerging researcher cohort, that would be a proxy for that would be your lecturer and the senior lecturers in the system. We're looking at the activity in terms of how many of them publish and how many of them are actively seeking funding from the National Research Foundation. Turns out that it's quite a limited number that actually does both. So we're looking at how do we then, you know, make interventions to make it a point that, you know, this pool of researchers become a feeder to what we call the established researchers. So these are researchers that are stuck in the middle, as it were. So they're not publishing, they're not also seeking funding from the NRF. So that study was commissioned to University of South Africa. We worked with the DVCs of research of universities, and the study has just been completed. It's on the table. We're actually engaging ourselves with the outcomes of that study and what possible interventions we may put in place. Then the other one, it's a postgraduate research training in engineering. At issue there was, if you look at students who are doing masters and PhDs in engineering, most of them were not South Africans. Most of them were students coming from Africa. So we're looking at the issues of demand and supply in the country and seeing whether are we responsive, for example, to the need out there in terms of that particular levels of skills. That study as well has just been completed, and we're actually engaging with it. Then we commissioned as well in the same course of the current MTF, we commissioned the NRF to put in place what we call a digital platform for tracking postgraduate students. We're investing about R1 billion in terms of postgraduate student funding to the NRF. We need to be able to assess value for money. So the question, the basic question is, where do the students go to after their period of funding or after completing their studies? So the NRF is actually completing, and it will answer most of the questions in terms of, you know, do they go to the market? Do they go to establish, you know, their own enterprises? How many of them are unemployed? How many of them, for example, go to international laboratories? And yeah, it's a study that will, you know, unpack a whole lot of issues about the investments that we're making to, particularly towards PhD training. Let me respond to the e-science one. It's driven by Wits University, but Wits is in partnership with the University of Limpopo and also with UNIVEN, University of Venda. Actually, it's got 30 students, and I just also, in terms of the gender breakdown, it's 14 females and also 16 males, and these students are funded by the DST. Now, just on the unemployment question, maybe lower down, not tackling it at the high, I don't know, at the PhD level. When this problem of unemployed science graduate, when it actually reared its ugly head way back in 2005-06, we put in place a program, the DSC NRS internship program, with a bias, for example, for black students, and particularly black students who graduated from historically disadvantaged institutions. And that DSC internship program has grown, started very on a small footprint in 2005-06, but currently, actually, as you saw the figures, we're placing about 800 students in that DSC NRS internship program in over 71 host institutions. I've got the figures here in terms of its effectiveness. Now, up to the year 2015-16, from 2005-06, we had placed 3,542 interns, of which 1,210 have actually managed to secure tenured employment from the host institutions, because we placed the students to the host institutions, we put an expectation on the host institutions that you shall consider employing the students at the end of the internship. So during the internship, or even immediately after the completion of the internship period, some of the students get absorbed for employment. And a further 753 would or have actually embarked on further studies after the completion of the internship program. And what we do, if you are a major in microbiology, we find you a host institution where you're going to apply those skills. And in so doing, then, you know, students' interest in research gets reignited. Right, on the issue of the other program as well that we have at the PhD level is the professional development program. We could not extend the concept of the internship to the PhD level, so we put an equivalent of it, we called it a professional development program. And this program targets PhD graduates, and we put them in, you know, research intensive institutions, mainly in the national facilities and other science councils, with the explicit purpose as well that after that period of placement, the host institutions will actually absorb them. And unfortunately, I don't have the figures, but there are actually promising results from that program. Then I think the issue of the PhD employment in general, according to the stats, SA figures actually, when they published the unemployment figures, I think it was one quarter in the previous year, among the master's and PhD graduates, the unemployment rate was less than 2%. And actually put that unemployment rate among people with first degrees at 5%. There were several studies, one of them actually conducted by a researcher at the University of Pretoria, looking at the rate of unemployment among PhD graduates. But that study looked at, you know, companies that are JSE listed. And it has its own problems because it wasn't looking at research and development in intensive, you know, companies. It was looking at your work, your pick and pays and all of that. But then we are in partnership, as the DG said, with a number of companies in terms of, you know, the collaborative training of PhD programs, because the problem becomes that companies are not coming forth. You know, South Africa doesn't have, for example, the concept of what we call industrial PhDs. In other countries, you'll start your PhD and it's linked to an industry problem. Here, we train our PhD students, and it's only when they've graduated then they start looking for employment. With the trip, a problem will be identified by an industry. It will utilize the human resources and the staffing resources that are residing at universities. So those students would work with industry-based programs and thus facilitating their absorption into employment. On the issues of deploying PhD graduates to schools. I know that in terms of the NSFAS funding, the discourse currently is that government is not providing free education, but government is providing a state bursary. And that, attached to that state bursary, is a condition that graduates must go out to the communities and serve. So there's a possibility of you know, deploying our students in various community projects, particularly those students who are receiving state funding. I think there's one question that I've just forgotten, maybe.
We'll come back to it. I think there was a question by Honorable Lotrit around science engagement and whether we see it as a potential area for having some of the graduates. I'll respond to it in relation to how we are embarking on a different model for science engagement. Thanks, Peggy. Mr. Sugar.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. On the question that has been raised with our collaboration with Japan and opportunities for training of unemployed, I must say that the program that has been developed with Hitachi focuses in the main for professional development. That focuses for those who are already in work. However, the Japanese government does offer master's scholarship for postgraduate students. Those will be students who are not employed. They would be offered those scholarships, and quite a number of students have graduated through these programs. There is, however, an opportunity for us to negotiate with the Japanese government, but also other international partners, to look at internationalizing the internship program, where some of the unemployed students here in South Africa could be taken to go overseas to train in some of the industries abroad. It's something that we can look at. But I think that some of the Japanese, for instance, companies that are here in South Africa do have a program of internship, but though we don't track those placements, but it's something that we can find out whether they do take an internship. But I would like to believe that they do. But however, what I would like to take in terms of the discussion now is that we should negotiate opportunities for South African unemployed students to get internship programs in our international partners, you know, industry, be placed in Japan, UK, Germany, and other countries that would be open to such a, you know, suggestion. Is something that would like to make a follow-up. But the point we'd like to make is that indeed the nature of the program with Hitachi and ESCOM focuses on those who are already in the work situation. But for other scholarships, they do offer for masters and other PhD students, those who are not studying currently, they would apply for such opportunities. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. So maybe to wrap up on this PhD issue, is to accept and agree that we will bring to the committee, when these studies have been completed, the tracer studies that the NRF is conducting at this point in time, so that we get a better sense of how and where these PhD students are going. So that's the first recommendation I'd like to make. The second one is, I remember Honorable Goranov serving on the Portfolio Committee for Trade. We used to have a program called TRIP, which is Technology and Human Resources for Industry Partnership. It wasn't run by the Science and Technology Department, but it was run by Trade and Industry. The NRF was managing that program on behalf of DTI. And then last year, this program was modified, and the NRF is no longer managing it on behalf of the Department of Trade and Industry. The reason why we're mentioning it, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that it was a program that was meant precisely to train PhDs in the universities, but with problems that are solved in industry with the understanding that as soon as they have been trained, they become the employers in the organization that would carry that research and solve those problems. I thought that it was also a program that would address this discussion that we're having, the interface between the training and the absorption, perhaps maybe at industry specific. And I don't know how far this program is since it's no longer, I mean, maybe this is something we could follow up on, maybe the joint committees would put us to the sword and say how far is this and is it still working, is the second suggestion. And then the third one is perhaps for us with the NRF and maybe some of the science councils to take this as the next discourse. And I'm grateful, Honorable Chair, that the National Advisory Council on Innovation is also here, because their mandate, amongst other things, is to look at what's happening in the entire system. So maybe this is something that they can produce a report and advice for the Minister, of course, ultimately to yourself. So maybe those would be the three action points that if you agree, we will all work towards, and then at an appropriate time come and give the committee, you know, the status of this. And then maybe we can ask Mr. Mwofe if on the project Kulelwe.
Thanks very much, DG and honorable members. Just say the quick answer to that is, as the DST, we haven't presented it to that committee, so I'm not sure if the Department of Health has done so. And just perhaps to provide a little bit of an indication of what this project is, it's a project where the device has been developed that basically measures the flow of blood in the umbilical cord of a pregnant mother. And in that you are able to pick up how the fetus is growing and the function of the placenta. Now, it's very crucial in the sense that normally you see the mother being healthy and you think that everything is fine. And during the late stage of pregnancy, then that's where you have stillborns and challenges like that. And it has been picked up through this particular device that if you use it, you are able to pick up the fetal age, the gestational age, and be able to tell if everything is well. Even when everything is looking well, there have been a lot of problems that were picked up which were then dealt with. So that's really what it is. And so we're collaborating with both the Medical Research Council and the CSIR and the department. So maybe they have presented it, but we can just follow up on that. DG, perhaps maybe to also deal with the questions of unattained targets. I don't know. Okay. So there's two unattained targets by Program 2. The one relates to the disclosures. It very much links to the discussions that we were having here around training. Now, the National Intellectual Property Management Office, when it was established, it had one, as one of its mandate, the establishment of offices of technology transfer in all research institutions, which include our universities. And when we started, obviously, we didn't have the kind of properly skilled people. So we had to, there were people who were employed who were engineers, and people who were employed who were lawyers. And for you to really fit in into that space, you needed a specific training, which was not what currently happens at universities. So what we then picked up with the downward trend was that following the partnership that we have now with the World Intellectual Property Office, WIPO, we hold annual training courses, and we also have access to its online courses as well. And we have started to build this capacity in OTT offices. And one of the unintended consequences of that was that while initially we were receiving disclosures that were not properly interrogated and hence giving us high numbers of disclosures, we started seeing that the level of interrogation was improving and hence the numbers went down. But we also, instead of just rushing to decrease our targets, we then thought it would be helpful for us to work to increase, to find ways of increasing the number of disclosures by expanding our OTT office programs, which we started doing. We now have a coverage of, I think, all institutions. We have about 18, 12 months or so ago launched these offices at the University of Venda. We also supporting other newer institutions to really start to do that. And we started seeing the beginning of this year that the disclosures are picking up way ahead of where we were in the first quarter of the previous year. So hopefully we are beginning to address this. But it has really been mostly the consequence of people now knowing what they're doing than they were initially. The last one relates to the issue that the DG raised. It was really the quality of the data that we received from the NRF, which was leading us to an audit finding. So we had to make a decision whether to improve on the quality of the information, which meant that you then have to report on those students that you are sure they have been vetted even by us and be satisfied. So that's really also led to the reduction. And we're hoping that now dealing directly with the host institutions as the NRF deals with their systems, hopefully will help us to clean up and we can again improve on that target. Thank you.
Thank you. On the issue of the vacancies, we have various plans that we're trying to put in place in addressing the issue. And one of it being, members will remember that actually the department hasn't filled vacancies since June 2016. So to date we've got about 78 vacancies. So over time we've managed to come just below the ceiling. So it's only this financial year where we'll be able to realize some savings, which give us a little bit of a leeway to fill in some. So what we've done, EXCO developed a process, a framework, whereby we can reprioritize because the savings could fill just less than 10 positions. So we have got a framework that has identified which of the first can be filled from the 78. So there's a recruitment process that is currently underway to fill 8 positions, and 5 of those positions is at the senior management level. And then the second way in which we are dealing with it, we also have a secondment policy where we tap into capacity, available capacity from our own entities and also from other organs of state. And lastly, we're also currently embarking in the process of business process mapping, where we're trying to see if we can reconfigure some of our functions, also automate some of our processes to increase operational efficiency so that we can be able to do more with less and not heavily rely on human resources. Yes, that's the DG. Maybe I should also talk to... Yeah. The issue of a sub-chair, if you could allow me maybe to give some context to it, because I was also present when the issue was discussed last week when the entity was making a presentation. Chair and members, the ASAF Act has a section where it says the academy must comply with the PFMA. So the challenge has been that the PFMA covers listed entity, mainly Schedule 2 and Schedule 3, and this ASAF is not listed. So the challenge has been, and especially for external auditors, when they audit the entity, they wouldn't be sure or they wouldn't know which provision of the Act to use because the academy was not listed. And hence the Minister of Science and Technology had to write to the Minister of Finance to seek clarity on this matter, and also that the academy has got voluntary based membership, which also had its own dynamic when you impose some of this this provision. Also, in addition to that, the challenge was that the size and the resources of is very tiny, and the PFMA itself also will need them to have a fully-fledged internal audit function, for example, risk management function. And I'll just give an example. The finance unit, I think they've got 2 or 3 people currently. So that was also an issue. But to date, we haven't received any
any feedback from the from Treasury, despite various follow-ups that we have been made. And once the department so it deemed fit that the entity comply with the Act, mainly that they are funded by the state, but also just to address this matter in the meantime, we had actually proposed that the Science and Technology Amendment Bill addresses the issue of removing that clause from the ASAF Act. So that's where we are now with the process, and I'm being told that it needs to serve to the Select Committee of the NCOP and is currently with the state law advisors. Thank you.
So maybe let me check, quickly go through the three that are outstanding, the first one being the PhDs in science communication. As members would know that we are proposing amendments to the NRF Act, and one of the proposals in the Act is to give the NRF the mandate to get into this public engagement and science engagement through SASTA, and we are looking at how we're going to resource SASTA. So we see, in fact, the average number is that 4% of the budget of all of the entities must be geared towards public engagement activities. So we suspect that the human resources that will be needed for this program in the year will begin to demand that some PhD students or people with PhDs who can explain, you know, science to the public would increase. So that's what we hope. And so the answer is yes, but we'll just work out the modalities. And then Honorable Korinov, the meerkat is 64 dishes. So when we started this program, it was an instrument that we funded, as you all know, and we pay as the South African government for ourselves and, of course, for scientific community globally to do science. Now, the SKA see meerkat as a precursor, as to understand how to construct a telescope, in a radio telescope of this nature. So their phase one, so the phase one for the SKA is 133 dishes that would be, if you like, added onto the 64 dishes. So we'll have 133 plus 64. That would make phase one of the SKA on the high frequency, because there's also, I think, another set of dishes in Australia. And then once that's been constructed, hopefully by 2026, between 2021 and 26, the international community would be looking at building phase two of the SKA. That's over 4,000 or 2,000 dishes, and those are the ones that would have spirals going into partner countries on the extreme right, Mauritius, Madagascar, and Mozambique, and then in the northeast it would be Kenya, Zambia, and then in the central part it would be Botswana, and then on the extreme left it would be stations in Namibia as well as Ghana. So that would be the full SKA. And the longer the baseline, the more you have dishes on the outskirts, the more you are able to have the full coverage of the sky, and therefore you begin to get better sensitivity and much more resolved set of objects that you are looking in the sky. So that's the features and the advantages of that. And as I say, at the moment, the assumption is that up to 2021, 2025 is the 103 dishes being rolled out in South Africa, 2026, 2030, and so forth, the phase two of the SKA to the rest of the partner countries in the continent. And then on the cyber framework, to date, I think we've rolled out high-performance computing on a bullet grid almost all the partner countries. So in Ghana, you know, we converted the dish, so if you have the dish and you can't compute this data, it's useless. Mozambique, Kenya, Botswana, Namibia, Mauritius, and Madagascar. And they are at different levels of training our Center for High Performance Computing, training the system administrators, the users, as well as to begin, I think, the next report that we will receive in the ministerial forum would be the utilization of this high-performance computing for radio astronomy, astronomy in general, and in other applications. But what I would recommend, Chair, as a second recommendation out of this, is that maybe the director for the Center for High Performance Computing come and share the full detail of the rollout that he has done and the utility and how this infrastructure is being used, and of course the South African contribution to the SADC and the skill set that the rollout is beginning to train. My suspicion, Chair, is that we've covered everything with the exception perhaps of the oversight issues that you've raised, which we accept, both in terms of coordinating the activities and the importance of oversight, not just ticking the box. Our minister has been asking us to improve our monitoring and evaluation, so both on the oversight but also the broad. So we will tighten up on this, and we accept the minister's observation. And then more funds from private sector. Chair, maybe let me take this opportunity to congratulate you. I know you've just graduated, and I don't know how we will solve this, but I think we just have to continue to work with the institutions to find the right balance. And then, we haven't concluded the discussion between ourselves, trade and industry, on this commercialization. I do know that there was a commercialization framework that was agreed between the two, and they were going to take this to cabinet. I'm not sure if they've done this. So these are ongoing discussions, but we don't have anything concrete, except, as I said, for DSPD and ourselves, there is this $2 billion in the next MTF. I suspect when we do that, we'll also clarify the roles of the incubation program, which ones we focus on and which ones they focus attention on. So I suspect we've covered everything, Chairperson, unless I've left anything out. Thank you very much.
Is there any other questions? Dr. Lokrit looks like he wanted to...
Look like
there's a question.
Yes, thank you, Chair. You read my face. DG, yes, the cyber framework, that's what I am interested in, but also the security aspect to that.
I think, Dr. Sitole, I think in the slides that you showed, I think all of these users were taken abroad on the security aspect, but that full presentation, Chair, will cover that as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I heard Mr. Hadebe saying those PhD students were not from South Africa but from Africa. I don't know where South Africa is. South Africa is some island outside Africa. Okay, thank you very much, DG, your team also for the responses. One question that you consistently now ask the entities and who are housed in different houses or buildings is the compliance on the safety of those buildings, because of what happened in Gauteng. So I think it's something that might have been an oversight or we took for granted, everybody, but it is something that we have realized that is important. So we've been doing that also. But on behalf of the committee, we'd like to thank you and congratulate you once again for the clean audit. It makes us feel good too. See, you do the work, we take the glory. But thank you very much. Honourable members, maybe you can have a 5 minute body break and continue now.
Mr. Shuba.
I'll find it. I hope. I came to me from inside like this.
But it is nice. Yeah. You see, I'm struggling to understand the picture. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes, bro. Well.
Super. Okay, bro. Okay, good.
I tried to talk to your colour. You are making a part of that.
Members and welcome Chairperson of ASAF, Dr. Kale, and Team ASAF. You're most welcome. I'm sorry, Naki. Speaking of ASAF, Naki, sorry about that. As we did earlier on, some of you probably were not here when we did our introduction. My name is Lindiwe Masebo, Chairperson of the committee.
And I'm Nick Kornoff, member of the committee.
My name is Nokuzola Ndongeni, member of the committee.
And Solofelo Mutsiri, member of the committee.
Today I'm Agnes Stack, member of the committee.
Good morning, I'm Tandi Mfulo, member of the committee.
Good morning, I'm Annelie Lokreet, member of the committee.
Good morning, Dr. Tembekwaya, member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kwere. You can introduce the team.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. This is just the only privilege I have to introduce my new chairperson, Professor Derek Swart. I'm sure most of you or some of you would know him. He started in his new position on the 1st of October together with the new council. And I would hand over to him because that's his responsibility. He's a boss, so he must introduce me and the team too.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Derek Swartz, and I'm going to ask my colleagues to introduce themselves. I'm actually quite fresh, 17 days into this new. So I'm a bit of a green hornet. And I really, welcome the privilege of serving in this capacity with your support and indulgence. I'm now semi-retired, was a vice-chancellor of two universities for about 23 years, 13 at the University of Fort Hare in the Eastern Cape, and then the balance at Nelson Mandela University, from which I retired sort of at the end of last year, and I'm now a professor in ocean sciences, playing a role in Operation Pakisa, and also setting up a new medical school for the university. And that's for the balance of my time. I climb mountains. Thank you very much, colleagues.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. Good morning. I am Dr. Tisetso Lepoto. I'm currently doing my postdoctoral research at Wits University. I was one of the youngest PhD graduates in 2016 in the field of molecular and cell biology with an emphasis to bioinformatics and biotechnology. At the moment, I'm currently supervising 6 master's students and 2 honors students, and I'm hoping that they graduate by the end of this year.
Good morning, honourable members. My name.
Doctor, please switch off.
Good morning. I am, in fact, a private sector participant on the NACI Council. I represent FEMA-DESA. It's a not-for-profit organisation where we are trying to improve the ecosystem for small tech businesses. Thank you.
You didn't tell us your name. No. Just said you are Italian.
Sorry, my name is Claire Buzetti, and I don't speak Italian.
Good morning, members, honourable members, and Chair. My name is Tulim Tetwa. I work with an organisation called Memeza, which aims to come up with the first public alarm systems in South Africa. The project is an innovation on its own, and it's been piloted in Deep Sloot with very good results. And it's actually currently experiencing a lot of issues that innovations in South Africa are experiencing. I think we'll discuss that later into the meeting. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Dr. Joyce Gavi Molefe. I'm a researcher at the African Institute for Medical Sciences, which is based in Nuremberg, but we have other centers in other African countries. Thank you.
Please repeat your name. I think it's because the other... Yes.
Dr. Joyce Gavi Molefe.
Morning, Chair and members. My name is Tato Dube from NACI. I'm the Deputy Director in the Office of the Acting CEO.
Dube.
Thank you.
very much. It's very good. Oh, Matsimula. Oh. We know you.
Yeah, I got the...
Okay.
The CFO.
Okay, you can. Ken also. Ken introduce us.
Paul Matsimula, the Parliamentary Liaison Officer and the Minister.
Good morning, Honourable Chair again and Honourable Members. My name is Pritima Kukule, the Chief Financial Officer at the DST.
Thank you very much for those introductions. You're most welcome to the Portfolio Committee to hear on your annual report, annual performance and the financial. We've been meeting and then hearing reports from all the other entities of the department since last week. Earlier on we had the department itself, DSC. We had to shift it to towards the end because of the availability of the minister. As Honorable Ndongeni observed, there's doctors, professors and whatever, so the minister is also moving in that direction because she was at Harvard last week for 2 weeks, and so she's along those lines. Prof. Swart, over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and colleagues. As I indicated in my preamble, we are really the incoming board members appointed by the minister. There are some members who are long-standing continuity members, and then a balance of, I think, about six or seven of us are totally new into it. We haven't had our first constitutive meeting yet. We hope to have that in November, and hopefully also with the minister. I still have to meet with the minister, and I think also my colleagues as well. As such, the report that Dr. Trele will, present represents a report emanating from the board that just handed over the leadership to the new council members, and therefore we, are of course now taking cue from the continuities of the work that had been done in the preceding period under the leadership of Professor Cheryl de la Rey. I met with Professor de la Rey a couple of weeks ago before I left for overseas to give me a debriefing about some of the operating issues, and of course I met with the acting CEO also on a number of occasions. So with your permission, Chair, could I hand over to Dr. Tele? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I do promise members that the mere fact that there are many doctors on the site, the presentation will be easy to follow. Chair, we thought it's important to just remind the honourable members about the mandate that they gave NAICI in 1997, which is essentially to advise the minister for science and technology, and through the minister, well, at the time there was a minister's committee, but it has since been abolished, and yet now the draft white paper, I think to some extent, is resuscitating that committee, and then cabinet on the role and contribution of science, mathematics, innovation and technology, including indigenous technologies in promoting and achieving national objectives. And the legislation sets out a number of key functions that NAICI is expected to perform, which relate to advice which may or shall, on request of the minister, focus on a number of areas. And with your permission, honorable members, I wouldn't want to go through line by line of those functions, but it's just to remind each other about what NAICI is expected to do in terms of the legislation.
Our vision is to be a leading advisory body to government on science, technology and innovation issues within a well-coordinated, responsive and functioning national system of innovation. And what defines our sense of existence is to provide evidence-based and informed advice to the minister and cabinet on STI matters. And we do that through the research expertise that we do have access to in the system and globally, as well as through mobilizing intellectual inputs from various stakeholders through what we call the roundtable discussions. Again, we had previously presented our strategic outcome-oriented goals, and I wouldn't want to go through each one of them. The slides are just a reminder to all of us about what is it that had shaped the report that we are presenting today. Of course, NECI, Chairperson, is always mindful of the context in which it's operating, both at a national and global level. We thought it's important just to remind ourselves of where we are coming from in terms of the STI policy trajectory from 1996. Of course, there is a bias why we have having this slide, because this report was the last report by the council that had done some work. For instance, the review of that 1996 white paper, as you see, and then provided advice to the minister, and has also been involved in what we call the policy reflection and renewal. The DG indicated that we have been commissioned to draft a high-level decadal plan, and we were asked to participate and comment on the various versions of the draft new white paper. So the outgoing council has been very much active through various phases of this process. Chairperson, when the council assumed its office in 2014, the then Minister Pandor assigned or requested NECI to undertake specific tasks, and those tasks are summarized or they are highlighted in red. And in the main, I've already alluded to, she asked that NECI conduct an assessment of how far we have progressed since 1996 white paper. And this was done, Chairperson, and a report is available. And the minister expected or requested NECI to draft a decadal strategy, but then that was later refined to a high-level framework. But in future, the minister said NECI will have to conduct five-year reviews once the decadal plan has been developed, to review that decadal plan on a five-year basis. And she asked NECI to advise on how to convert successful projects into new businesses. And she recommended, amongst other things, that NECI, on behalf of the system, should begin to conduct foresight studies, which would assist in identifying policy gaps and areas of scientific and technological activity that, as a country, we needed to add, and for the department to add into its portfolio of work. And we are glad to report, Minister, the Honorable Chairperson and members, that currently NECI is undertaking a foresight exercise which would feed into the new decadal plan. The process is at advanced stage. We've had more than 200 South Africans participating in the process online, and some, about 60, that attended our first workshop in July. And on this coming Thursday and Friday, we're going to be having a two-day workshop in St. George's, again to take forward this process, and we'll then have a final workshop in November. As an outcome, what we're envisaging to be the outcome of that foresight exercise would be a range of priorities that we'll be proposing to government and South Africa to consider for inclusion in the new 10-year innovation plan. And the orientation is to take, we're using the NDP vision as a basis of identifying those priorities that government should be focusing on. And of course, we'll try as much as possible to link it to what the white paper is proposing. Of course, NECI does contribute to the implementation of the NDP objectives indirectly through various ways. Of course, we do provide evidence-based or informed advice, and we've got examples of that. And then we do conduct systemic monitoring, evaluation, and learning, and we do analysis and engage experts and various stakeholders to reflect on various issues. And Claire Pusetti, Chairperson, if we still have time, could share with you the insights from the roundtable discussion that we had 2 days ago on one of the initiatives that began in the last financial year on technology diffusion or the absorption of imported technologies. You know, just to give members the insights of what we're talking about around and the value of roundtable discussions. The NDP chairperson is quite clear on its expectation of the system. And given the role that NECI is expected to do at a systemic level, including because the NDP says we need to increase the size and the effectiveness of the NSI, and there are various initiatives that are currently that were initiated in the last financial year by the outgoing council, which continue. Others were completed, including the launch of the indicators booklet that provides a sense of how far we are in terms of STI using few indicators. And we did have a national launch as well as two provincial roadshows in KZN, and we had another one here at Philippi Village in the Western Cape, which was quite interesting and exciting. And then, of course, we started a few projects that speak directly to that issue that the NDP is raising about the effectiveness and the size of the NSI. And again, that relates to, for instance, the uptake of locally produced technologies, the technology diffusion. We've responded to. There is an evaluation of the sector innovation fund, which we're almost done. And we think that the outcome of this work will give us a sense the extent to which the system is effective or not effective. The NDP chair also says that as a country, we need to create a common overarching framework to address pressing challenges in the NSI, including, of course, the way NDP phrase or frame NSI. It includes universities, it includes TVET colleges, it includes SOEs and the private sector. And then it says that the system should function in a coordinated manner with its objectives aligned to national priorities. We think that the council is convinced that its advice that it provided to government on the draft new white paper would go a long way towards the realization of that objective set out by the NDP, and the foresight exercise which I've mentioned, which is currently underway, would really help us or will contribute towards the realization of what the NDP, and finally the framework for the decadal plan that needs to be developed. Again, the NDP talks about the need to make sure that our researchers, they are transformed. They reflect the demographics of South Africa, both, well, in the higher education, the research councils, as well as the private sector. And then it says we need to revitalize science and mathematics and make sure that we have more young people leaving schooling with acceptable percentage pass in science and mathematics at grade 12. And there are initiatives that are currently underway, Chair, which began in the last financial year, which do talk to these areas, including we have now agreed with the Department of Basic Education that we would conduct an evaluation of all government initiatives that were intended to improve maths and science, because the question that we are asking is why the percentage number of young people obtaining mathematics and physics, at least 60% in maths and physics, is not increasing at the rate that we would like, notwithstanding numerous initiatives by government. So DPE has agreed that this would be a great contribution even in terms of their work. So this work is, we are about to start it. We have done a lot of groundwork. There's also work that is about to kick off, but its conceptualization started last year. We're looking at R&D personnel and the women's publications record, which is a huge concern. And we're interested to understand and do an analysis, and we are working with various institutions such as the HSRC and some universities to do this type of work, which will help us to better understand the transformation project that's undergoing in the system. Before, Chair, we talk about what we achieved or not achieved, it's important to be honest and acknowledge that during the period under review, there were there's still challenges that the Council acknowledged. They relate to the fact that the Council would produce advice, but its uptake and utility remains a concern for the Council, that in as much as government has been able to accept some advice, but you know the extent of the utilization of what NECI produces, it remains a challenge. You will also realize, Chair, that if you look at the council members, the composition of council that was inaugurated in 2014, compared that to the one that you see in your annual report now, there is a huge difference. So we've seen a number of high-profile people from the private sector resigning from the council for various reasons. And the council, I think the last time Professor De La Rey was here, she did acknowledge this as a challenge. So we're hoping that we would find a way working with our partners to address this challenge. Communication is a systemic challenge, Chairperson, that we are unable to communicate our achievements as a system. And NECI, we do acknowledge that there is a lot of work that we have done in the past, including the last financial year, which we are not adequately communicating to the public and the stakeholders. And of course, knowledge management is an ongoing challenge that we think we have tried. We have started a process to address it, but it remains a challenge. And then, of course, the bigger one relates to staff capability and organizational capacity to meet increasing demands. The new draft white paper, Chairperson, it proposes an expanded role and function of NECI, and without resources being provided, we are really worried that those demands may not be realized. And then part of the issues is about the delayed finalization of the new organogram, the job descriptions, and the skills audit. And then, of course, the issue around vacancies. The CFO did deal with this question earlier on. But the scope of NECI's work is expanding. Chair, just some selected highlights. We had previously reported that NECI was asked to develop an STI data and information portal for the system. we are glad to report to the portfolio committee that we were able to launch the portal, and phase one has been completed, and we have now completed the business case for the upscaling, which would be presented to the first council meeting for consideration. We are working with a number of institutions, Chairperson, in making sure that this facility becomes a truly systemic function, so that it's able to provide the intelligence, the research platforms, it's able to store data and meets the needs of all stakeholders, and particularly policymakers. And of course, the second, which is a flagship project of NECI, we're able to produce and launch the indicators report, which, as I've said, it included engagements at provincial level with KZN and the Western Cape. In future, we would like to have roadshows throughout the country. So we are learning from these two engagements we have had, and to see if next year maybe we can not add another province or two. Chairperson, these are the examples of we've submitted few drafts, advice to the minister, including the one focusing on the white paper, the biomass assignment model with the bio-based economy. We submitted advice to government on the government support programs for business research and innovation. And the chairperson, and I think Honorable Kornoff and others, we were very glad that you could attend the third Global Forum of National Advisory Councils, which we hosted last year in Pretoria. As a consequence of that forum, chairperson, we've started drafting a book which will capture the presentations, the insights that were made, but also there might be some specific commissioned areas, pieces of work, which, because we would want this to become a resource not only to South Africa but mainly to the rest of the continent, where there are no NECI equivalents for our fellow African countries and others in the developing countries to also learn and see if they want to set up institutions of this nature, what are some of the lessons. But we also think that even the Global North would learn a lot from this resource. It's an advanced stage as we speak. It's part of the achievements. Of course, part of NECI's engagement of work, chairperson, is to make sure that we do engage with the global partners who are doing similar work, so that we can continuously renew our expertise and our knowledge, and we do represent most of these engagements that we are sharing with you. The government asked NECI to play a big role. For instance, the Egypt engagement, it was based on the portal work that we've made, and we were asked to go and share our experience with the rest of the continent in Egypt. So because AU is trying to develop a knowledge management communication system, and they didn't have any other best case except ours, and we went there to share our knowledge and experience. And again, we do participate in the OECD working party on biotechnology and nanotechnology and converging technologies. This is quite essential element of the fourth industrial revolution, and our contribution in this, as well as in terms of existing or the new policies, is critical. Mr. Makode, the DST DDG IPS, and myself, we participate in the OECD Committee for Scientific and Technology and Policy Workshop, CSTP. It's the highest decision-making structure that looks at various issues related to science, technology, and innovation, both in the developed and developing countries. And we were we had a pleasure of participating in those engagements because it helps us as South Africa to not only to learn but also to share our own experiences and build networks. Chairperson, this is the this is the composition, this is how the council was composed when it ended last year. And then, of course, DST, we are quite grateful to the modest budget that they have provided, and we were able, Chairperson, to spend as much as we were provided. The CFO is here, and Tato, they would expand if there's a need to deal with. In conclusion, Chairperson, NECI will continue to implement both the legislative mandate and the ministerial assignments, which would include the 2014 and we're still going to be having an inaugural meeting with the minister. And then make sure that the strategic plan and annual performance plan are aligned with the NDP and to some extent the DST strategic plan. The NECI's focus is systemic. We have the responsibility to ensure that the NSI has the necessary planning, analytical, and M&E capabilities. The new white paper proposes that NECI develops an M&E system and framework. The work has already started. We produced last year a preliminary framework, and towards the end of the year, we'll have a conceptual framework that will consult widely, and we should be able to meet the proposed white paper targets. We will continue to deepen and consolidate our engagements with various actors in the system because NECI's task is not to do primary research, but we have to recognize that we have universities, we've got science councils that do this work, we've got individual South Africans who do this work. Our job is to know who's doing what and be able to harness and utilize that data to produce the necessary analysis. We are part of the continent and the region. We're working closely with the DST International Cooperation and Resources to make sure that we play our role in this regard. And then, of course, at an organizational level, Chairperson, as you correctly said, we get audited as part of the DST. So we have no intention of impacting negatively on DST's assessment. So our task is to make sure that we meet our predetermined objectives and our plans are they meet the SMART principle. We undertook, Chairperson, I think it was an oversight on my part. The NECI completed an institutional review which looked at NECI's existence from 2009 to 2018. We have provided that report to the minister. She's currently considering it. And the report makes various propositions about the future of NECI, and I think maybe the minister would be able to share with the portfolio committee the report once she has processed it. And then, of course, we're looking forward to implement a new organogram once it's finalized, and we continue to encourage staff to develop themselves and then work on our communication, repositioning, and knowledge management. And then, of course, digitization is here, and ICT, so NECI cannot be left behind. We have made progress in terms of improving our systems and processes and reducing the travel requirements for people to go to Pretoria to attend a one-hour meeting. With those few slides, Minister, thank you very much for the opportunity to do the presentation.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kele, Chairperson of Minister. Mm-hmm. Not a bad idea, though. Thank you very much for that presentation, and also thank you, Professor Swart. Just to give members, Dr. Tembagwayo, Dr. Lotrit, Honorable Ndongeni, Honorable Tak, your decadal question of last week is relevant today. Okay. That was.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the presentation. The first one, I think there is an infringement on the vision of NACHI. It is clearly stated that you are a leading advisory body to the government on science and technology. I'm not going to read it further. And read with slide 9, obviously that has also been mentioned on the strategic outcome orientation goals, which one of them is transforming NACHI into a smart, efficient, and learning organization. Yet, at the same time, you fail to appoint a permanent CEO. Last year when NACHI was here, this problem was mentioned of the acting CEO. It's already a year. Some new members are introduced to us today. Why is the CEO, the appointment of the CEO, neglected? We would like to know today because it's over a year. Secondly, on slide 18, my problem is there has to be prioritization of very important aspects that would make NACHI the NACHI association that we expect it to be. We can never expect that communication and knowledge management be a challenge at this present moment, because one of the mandates is to give advice. So how can you be able to can give advice on such a very important body, yet you identify communication and knowledge management as a challenge, including the production and utilization of advice? I mean, that's part and parcel of vision and mission. So according to me, all of this 1, 2, 3, 4 aspects that are identified as challenges definitely are supposed to be identified as the prioritized aspect that would form NACHI as the best possible entity within DST. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also thank you for the presentation. Chair, I think we once again with a situation in terms of funding. And as one goes through the presentation, one realizes the very important role that NACHI does play. Now, I just want to ask two questions. One is more general because I'm very curious about this. You do rely on researchers at other institutions, universities and so forth. What is the general stance these days of researchers and universities to assist with this kind of research that you want them to do, given the financial constraints that you do have? And I think Professor Swartz also know universities are in dire straits in terms of their funding, and is there capacity available and time available for the kind of research you want? And then secondly, you refer to the new organogram. This new organogram, will it be a reduced structure based on the financial constraints, or will it just be perhaps a bit more flat management, or could you just give us a bit of an indication there? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. On slide 15, you talk about the framework for decadal plan for STI to be developed. Can you please give us a time frame? The second one, how many vacancies do you have at the moment? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Tuck, you're fine.
I'm fine, thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Mfulo.
Mine is on the side of slide number 23. I can see it's written allocated expense available, but it's not, it's been summarized. I would have loved to see when it comes to compensations of employees, just to have a bigger picture of exactly what is happening. Now you are acting like a conduit, you know. Take from there, it goes there, you don't have a road inside. That's what it says here, in terms of your finances. Payment of capital assets, what is that? So it needs to be clear so that when we agree in terms of your budget, that you've got a clean, the department, because if the department is clean, it means you are clean. I don't know. You are telling us. I would love to see. In terms of your staff, why was it delayed? What are the challenges that you delayed your organogram and job description? Is it a challenge because there's no one who can capture it? Or what is it? What is it that makes you to be delayed to finish the organogram and then we can start to function? Because for now, it's like you're just hanging there to do things. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think on the issue of the challenges, I think you have clapped challenges and opportunities, so they are all in one slide. Mm-hmm. So one is either I take them all as challenges or take them all as opportunities. So I think that's what's needed to be clarified. And just on the issue, I think on slide 19, you highlight those entities that you collaborate with, HSRC, ASAF, NRF, and so forth. I just wanted to find out, are those you utilize for you to your advisors, your advisory aspects? Is it just from interacting with those research institutions, or you go out beyond these entities that are also related to the department? And lastly, on the issue of I think it's slide, the others, yeah, I think it's slide, oh yeah, slide 16, where you speak of revitalizing science and mathematics by increasing the number of school leavers eligible to study science and mathematics based subjects at university. I think we've been saying, and we also advise observed in other countries, that starting them at school leaving part is not very helpful on issues of increasing the number of those who do science and mathematics. And I think it is good that you also interact with the Department of the Basic Education. Yeah, because I think it will be important to start them at kindergarten, for instance, you know, early childhood development there, and move up, so that, because if they are from grade 10, they've already missed the boat, and it's not helpful, and hence you find the complaints at university level. So I think we really need to, so that you don't put resources on something, on a sinking boat, but if you do the collaboration with other relevant departments, taking into account that we are one unitary government, and the collaboration with other departments would also save us resources, but also the outcomes will be much better, and it will be what is desired. I think there is another question. It's over to you, Dr. Kale. Prof, I think apparently the protocol will be for you. To delegate.
I heard him referring to me earlier on. I wanted to make a comment about being a diplomat on this regard. Well, the second half of the first question about the permanent CEO. I mean, I'm obviously new council, so I will have to. I am briefed about the issue, though, because I've had discussions with the acting CEO, Dr. Pele, as well as also the DG of the department. I'm yet to meet with the minister, as is my colleagues as well, and that will obviously be an issue. I understand from the briefings that it's not an issue that is recent. It's been coming for a while. And then I, having been a CEO myself for more than two decades, I understand the need for that. So I don't need any persuasion on the imminence and the importance of doing that. But I'm just going to say I have to take this issue up on behalf of the board and with the concurrence of my colleagues here. Of course, we haven't even had one meeting yet as well. But that certainly would be a numero uno. A number one priority to stabilize the organization to ensure that that's done. So all I can indicate at this stage, colleagues, with your indulgence, is a commitment to follow this up expeditiously with the powers that be that preside over the finalization of the decision so that when we do come back next time, hopefully this issue is resolved either way. As such, and so I'm afraid I can't help further on this issue myself. Thanks, Chair.
No, thanks. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Chair, let me start with your questions. Let's start with the last one. I fully agree with you. This is what the NDP states: revitalize science and mathematics by increasing number of school leavers. That's what they are saying. That's what that document is saying. Our own interpretation as NAICD, it's threefold. Well, we said firstly, because last year you invited us to present the STI indicators booklet by Dr. Jamin, and then we showed you a slide based on an international comparison which was indicating that we are having fewer schools with learners that were obtaining above 60% in maths and science. And unfortunately, most of those schools happen to be in rural and poor, impoverished communities. So, and we said, what is it that we need to do as NECI, given our role? The first thing we said, but the Department of Basic Education and Education then had been implementing numerous initiatives, including the Denali Schools program some times back. What happened? So we said, maybe we need to do an evaluation at a systemic level, at a national level, of these initiatives so that we can understand what is it that is still making us not able to address this challenge. And then that's why we had to engage with the Department of Basic Education to, number one, to map all their initiatives, which focuses from early childhood, primary school, their teacher development, and so forth and so forth. So that's one part we would want to do. But the second part, because this is long term, we have agreed that South Africa, given the challenges around the economy not growing and so forth, we can't wait for 10, 15, 20 years to resolve this pipeline issue. Maybe what we may need to do, and we've had discussions with the HSRC because there are some experts who are responsible for doing these longitudinal studies. We said maybe the second study that we need, or the analysis that we need to do, is to say what is it that can be done to increase the number of schools that produces learners, at least at graduate, at grade 12. With mathematics and physics obtaining 60% as a short to medium term. And then thirdly, it's part of the conversation. Those who know about the fourth industrial revolution, if you prefer to use that, or the
or if you prefer the Chinese notion, the new industrial revolution. They say that you have to think about education, STEM, the science, technology, engineering, mathematics, differently. You now have to add attitudes. You have to think differently. You have to start teaching kids at kindergarten at grade 00 or grade 00R, coding, programming, and so forth. Some independent schools, they're already doing that. But our public schools are nowhere near that start. So part of what we need to be, in fact, we used a term recently at one of our meetings. We said we need to be thinking about education from birth to grave. So if you are having that integrated notion of education from the time the child is born to a person passing away, you may need to think differently around the education. So that's the third component, which NECI, Chairperson, I think it's an idea. We'll present it to the new council. But concretely, Chairperson, we fully agree with you, and we feel that if we could do these three things, NECI could really be playing, we could contribute towards finding some solution to the challenge that the country, and the excitement with working with basic education is because, you know, they said they themselves don't have answers to why the problems continue to exist, so they'll be looking forward to the outcome of the work, and then so that's a big plus for us. Two, I agree, Chair, that maybe the slides on the challenges and opportunities might have been confusing, but I was, in the way we were preparing it, we were saying, in as much as we view those issues as challenges, but some of them, they present an opportunity for NECI to think differently around how it, is it doing its work. And I fully agree that communication and knowledge management is vitally important to any organization. So what we're talking about here is that NECI has been in existence for more than 20 years. And we have never been able to record knowledge or to decode knowledge that people who have been at NECI Council from 1997 up to 2018, there hasn't been any systematic process to access the knowledge that they accumulated at that time. That's number one, the councillors, those who served as councillors, Dr. Tembekwayo. Two, there are people who worked as part of the secretariat. Some of them have left, some of them have been there for more than 8 years. But if they were to leave today and you employ someone else, that new person will not have insights into how that person did his or her work. So what we have started doing is to make sure that part of our meetings we record them, because this is part of knowledge management. You record and then you find a way where to store that information so that for future generations people would know why a particular decision was taken. And then we will need to then go to identify various people who served in the NECI Council before and interview them, try to access that knowledge. And part of the reason, there are two things. One, if you don't do it, you lose the institutional memory. But secondly, some of the people, they become consultants. And this is what they do even in government. They leave government, they become consultants, and they come back to government, and then they get paid based on the work, on the knowledge that they would have accumulated as officials. For example, if I were to leave government and then establish my own private consultancy, and then departments would want to know, for instance, to be assisted with planning, I may come back and say, I am willing, I can help you, I have so much experience in planning. And then I would be appointed. So that's what we're trying to do. We're working with DST Knowledge Management Unit because we're saying that we need to sort out that problem. Communication, the point I was making is that I'm sure even your interactions with CSIR, the NRF, TIA, there's a lot that is happening in the system, but it's not known out there. If it's known, it's not communicated in a way that would empower an ordinary citizen to know what South Africans, but also those who would like to use that information. It's not packaged in a way that makes it easy. Chair, the slide about these partners, it's about the portal. These people, the slide 19 is about the portal. So the institutions that you see here are the data sources, the people that generate data. So we are collaborating with them in respect of the portal. But in terms of developing advice, we use these, but also we use other experts, individual experts, as well as international organizations whom we have partnerships with, and then to produce advice. So advice is not confined to these institutions, but we try and use our entities as much as we can so that we don't have to spend money. There was an issue about whether university researchers are willing to work with us. It's true. Whereas ASAF would say that they don't pay academics to do the work, in our case, they expect us to pay them. They are treasury rates that we use, and we are upfront with them when we approach them and say, we would like you to help us, provided you are willing to be remunerated based on this treasury hourly rates. And in most instances, they do accept those rates, and then they work with us because we've built their relationship over time. There are those that would say to us, no, these rates are ridiculous. We'd say, okay, it's fine. So we will then go and find, unless it's a project where you really need that person, and he or she is the only person perhaps in the country who can give you what you're looking for. Again, there are other rates or systems that working with the CFO, we would then find the mechanisms to bring in those people. But generally, the researchers, they find it easy because some of them, NECI gives them the platform to expose their work, which otherwise would remain confined in the academia. But it also gives them a chance to apply their knowledge. So in that sense, we haven't experienced challenges. CFO and Tasu, I think you will deal with the question of the finance slide. The issue around the organogram, the delays, it's really about we got to a stage where some staff members, especially, let me just be blunt, there was a skills audit conducted by an external service provider appointed by HR, and it produced a report. The report was not kind to some staff members in terms of their capacity, their fit to the organization. As a consequence, they then approached their unions. So the process has basically been stalled by the fact that some staff members were aggrieved and their unions took up the matter with HR. So it then delayed the whole thing. But the minister asked HR to submit to her a report by the end of August, which I assume that they did because she said she wanted to finalize this matter as soon as possible. So because the delays have been really... whether the new organogram... The idea about, Honorable Member Ludwig, it's going to increase, not necessarily the size, but the capacity, the level of capacity required. for NECI to fulfill its mandate. Right now, where I am, my position is at a Deputy Director General level. And then there's only one person who's at a Chief Director. The rest are at Director and Deputy Director level. So the type of organization that NECI would require, you can't have that type of and the level of expertise. Even the experts who did the institutional review have commented that it's the expertise is too low level for NECI to fulfill its mandate. That's why it would permanently be going out, getting consultants and expertise to do the type of work. Hence the proposal to have high level capacity, perhaps add two new positions at the chief director level, high level, to give it the necessary capacity, and then maybe one or two directors. But the focus is on the two areas that were identified as a gap. That's on the economic impact as well as the social innovation impact, because that was identified as a gap in the system, that we have very few people who are looking at science and innovation policy and its impact on the economy and society. And we said, if NECI were to do what it's supposed to do, we need to beef up that capacity. So that's essentially what that structure, that proposed organogram is intended to do. Again, it would be in line with what the new white paper is proposing. We don't envisage it to be a huge organization, because as we are saying, if we can achieve that coordination with other science councils and universities, have a good partnership, you don't need to then have a massive secretariat in NECI, but you need good quality, solid secretariat, and then have good networks that could help you. I dealt with the issue around the prioritization. You're absolutely right. Maybe my last, there are 2 points. The timelines around the decadal plan, as the DG was saying, they're expecting the framework from NECI by March or April next year. So that's what we're going to give them. The foresight exercise, which I alluded to, which would be an input into this process, by end of November, we are envisaging to complete that process. And it's open. Anyone who wants to know what's going on there can access the information. And I think, Chair, at a later stage, once that process is completed, we may be able to come and present and share with you from the start what did ordinary South Africans thought about the areas that we should be proceeding. And then finally, what was finally decided as the priorities. So we could make that information available. The vacancies, there are two. It's a DD, Deputy Director, and an Assistant Director who resigned, and it's part of what the CFO, well, of course, including the Acting CEO, there are three vacant posts at NECI if we include the CEO. It remains. It's a real challenge. The point about the uptake and the utilization of advice. And NECI members, they have raised this issue. The councillors, that they would like government to utilize what a lot that NECI would have produced so far, and what it would produce in the future. But our partners globally, they said, it's not a peculiar problem. It's a global problem. And you need to find a way of dealing, improving. We ourselves, we do acknowledge our weaknesses, which may be leading to why, in some instances, government has not been able to utilize our advice. But we also think that government can do a lot with what we have produced. Let me ask the CFO to deal with the financials.
Okay, thank you. The proposal by Member Mfulo that we should further break down the budget items is noted, and we'll implement that in all our future reports. But also, just to clarify, provide clarity for the purpose of this discussion, the compensation of employees comprises of salaries that were paid to the NACI secretariat. That's purely employees. It excludes the council. And goods and services comprises of administrative and operational costs, mainly travel and professional services, as the CEO alluded earlier on that they do some of the work with universities, and we pay them the a particular rate. And then in terms of payment of capital assets, that mainly represent tools of trade, which will be the furniture, office furniture, computers, and office equipment. And transfers and subsidies, the 39,000, it was a leave payout to the employees who resigned, and that is according to the Treasury standard chartered of accounts allocation to classify the leave payout under the item of transfer and subsidies. But we surely will provide a clear detailed breakdown in future. Thank you. Okay.
Colleagues, I just wanted to make a comment on the issue about the absorptive capacities of the system with respect to advice giving. It is a huge universal problem, and we need to figure out how to crack this much more effectively, in my view. I'm just now speaking from a higher education perspective. I spent quite a bit of time in that sector. Is that you can generate a lot of advice, but the capacity of the system to absorb that and to translate that into remedial and innovative changes, raises a whole series of questions about how the ecosystem is set up, you know, the entire system of decision-making in government. And it would be very interesting for us to probe that if it has not been done before. What advice can we give, and this is another secondary advice, give to the decision-makers to set up their decision-making regimes, the way in which cabinet sits, cabinet committees, processes, right up to the accounting bodies, in a way that centers the advisory issues right at the heart of decision making. And then secondly, to look at the mechanisms of translating decisions or policies, if you like, or strategies into implementation programs and plans, which the bureaucrats, the mandarins, the civil servants have to take up, because it's one thing for the politicians to make the decisions at the provincial or national level. It's a different issue at the rate and the success of taking that up and translating that into effective solutions. As it is commonly known, South Africa is very good on policy pronouncements, the beautiful policies that we write, and advisory statements that I can often not find fault at. What is at issue in our country for the last two decades, I'm sure you would agree, is the success of translating that into concrete programs of actions that can really flow through to the system. So I really would like to raise that as a point that with our colleagues who would like to look at for answers to this particular problem. Then the second part of it is about when you make advice, and I used to advise government ministers, you know, from a university perspective of what we need to do to alter the education system over the years. You have to decide about, are you going to take a shotgun approach? In other words, you're going to have a whole concertina of different ideas and you literally flood the system with different kinds of advisors. Or do you pick your battles carefully and look at the kinds of advice that could be catalytic, that could be system changing, and could be exponential in its impact? So you may not have 20 pieces of advice coming out over every three-year period, but you may have five or six big issues that if you get them right, they can have a catalytic and a system-changing effect on the system. And that's something that I had to discuss in my informal meetings with the acting CEO, you may recall this, in Pretoria the other day, is maybe we need to do also a self-critical reflection. Are we offering too many things and it's really overwhelming the policymakers, and should we perhaps look at the economy of advice giving? What would be the best way to do that, colleagues? And I thought maybe I should just raise those points for reflection as well by the committee. Thanks.
Thank you very much for those responses. I think in our study tour, we found that it was important to have like PhD students, and so South Korea, Japan as science communicators, and they do that in science centers, they communicate to children from ECD from that level, so to instill that a liking on science and maths. I think the engagement also with the Department of Basic Education is very important. And I've got a nephew who's doing his master's in chemical engineering, but he had to take a teaching post in Bushbuck region. He's teaching this grade 8. First time he was worried, he says, no, and these children, they all failed. So I said, talk to them. Why, what's the problem? He says, no, maybe one is that I'm not beating them. Maybe I'm too soft. But thirdly, when I engage them, they say, well, one thing for sure is that you'll be condoned. We'll go to the next class. And go to the next class. So that's also where the problem is, because they don't put much effort, knowing that they'll be condoned to the next grade, and then when they get to grade 10, 11, 12, that's where then things becomes to be tough. So I think the more engagement with the including ourselves to speak to our counterparts in that department. In the portfolio committee. But once again, thank you very much for the presentation, clean audit, and also contributing to the advisory and to the department and others. So if there's anything, we will, through our secretary or direct, interact and engage yourselves. Thank you very much once again.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and colleagues, for your helpful inputs as well. And I hope that when we do get back as a new board, we will be able to get a grip on many of the challenges that you've also raised with us. So thank you very much for your indulgence.
Thank you, and all of the best to the new board. Thanks. Members, just on the issue of tomorrow, we have a scheduled meeting, and also there's caucus. So that is, but the one thing is that, you are excused. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. The plenary sitting has been postponed, so it means we can still give honourable members the chance to attend caucus, and then after caucus, I'm not sure what time should we meet. Is 12 okay, or 1 or 2? 12. It's not a presentation. Tomorrow we're looking at the report. So are you going to thank you?
If we meet, we have to adopt a report. So we have to see the report before that. So can we just inquire from the secretariat? State of readiness, otherwise we should...
Okay, that's all.
Yeah.
Oh no,
what is it? I don't know. It's just sitting there on the table. So are we going to the next panel?
Chair, I just want to propose that I don't think there's now any hurry for Chanel's appetite to have it ready by tomorrow. Can we at least get them for Friday?
Yeah, that's what Renee was whispering to me, that they can circulate it by Friday, so we don't have to have a meeting tomorrow.
Okay, sure.
Thank you very much. So members will be notified of the date next week, definitely a meeting, the issue of the venue. Yeah, then Shana, please.
Just two invitations, the one for the White Paper Summit, that's in Pretoria, the 9th of November.
The meeting is still on, Dr. Kimberweyer.
Okay, members, could you just email me or the SMS to confirm and then give me the return. I would think that all year, Thursday, so I was looking from Cape Town late afternoon, but when we go back, I'm sure everybody's going to be benefit the president. So that just needs to be forwarded to me. Then I can, yes.
That is the 9th of November.
Yes.
It's Friday.
Yes, that's our idea, yes. So we'll fly the late afternoon, the 9th, early evening. The 8th and then we'll be there tonight and return to our residence this evening of the 9th. The second invitation is to participate in a workshop that will develop science, technology, and innovation policy training framework for the Southern African Development Community policy volunteers. So we invited the committee to nominate two people to partake or be present at this workshop. I've got the outcome document and the people who know the detail about it. The date is the 29th and the 30th of October. I think it's a Monday and a Tuesday. And it's in Pretoria. So we need two members from the committee, if the committee so decides to take up this invitation. Two persons.
I just wanted to suggest the chairperson to be the first person to attend to that.
Nick can go if nobody else, but you can find out from yourself if there's anybody who would want to go.
Only when you come back, whether the DIY wants to go.
Sure, I'll just have to check the date.
29th and 30th, it's Monday and Tuesday. Okay, then we'll liaise with Shannon. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. The meeting is now adjourned. Thank you very much for your participation.
How are you? Good. I have a little nice little
coffee.
Yeah?
Thank you.
Once you must tell them, next time when they have more, we need them to come.